那可不是。I would like to welcome each and every one of you here this evening. And it's a delight and a pleasure to come. He and I are going to have some dialogue, some communication together over the next hour or so. The first time we met was about 4.5 minutes ago, just outside the door there. And Stan from Shai, that about a year ago we established a community called the Dharma community in northern Israel. He and I, of course, have been to India a few times. We have a theme as well together. And the theme is the power of now. You're not going to ask any difficult questions this evening. and the power of now is three question marks just at the end of it. So, is there anywhere, Shai, that any point that you'd like to begin? I could ask one or two small questions.
Okay.
I'm rather curious, because it's the first time we've met, to know a little bit of your background. So, what took you to India, or as they say in India, what is the purpose of your visit? and then if you're in a relationship, or they're not sure, are you one person or two? So, when did you first contact with Dharma, spirituality, India, teacher, teaching?
It all began at the age of 20. Yes. When I first heard from my transcendental meditation teacher, the term enlightenment. Then I asked him, what is the meaning of enlightenment? And he told me that it means that you experience a unity with the entire universe, the entire cosmos, and with God. Then the moment I heard the meaning, the way he described it, it hit me, and it was, and ever since I had this passion and totality towards reaching this goal, I thought I have to have this one. Yes, and I have to give everything that I have for this purpose.
Where did you first hear this? This is from the TEF, the CMT? From the CMT here in Israel?
Yes, in Israel.
So, having heard this and being inspired by this, then that was a motivating factor to take you to Mother India?
Yes.
And then, when you got to India, what happened?
Well, I... At the beginning, everything I did was trying to reach this goal through intellectual understanding, you know, to project through the mind situations of awakening, okay, and then to imagine that I got it. Yes, and every time it was a confidence, a real confidence that I got it. And then after a few hours, it began to fade and I realized that it was only a projection. It was very disappointing to realize that it could not be one of my ambitions, you see. And then I met a certain Sufi master, and again I tried to get some kind of a confirmation that he should, confirm my realization,
yeah,
or something like that. And then he told me that I have to stop trying to become a master or a teacher, a Buddha or an Osho, and I have to go on my own path. I have to. He told me, you may not be like a lotus flower. Buddha was a lotus, but and you may be only the grass in the garden, but look how beautifully the garden, the grass in the garden grows. So I was really disappointed. And I didn't have any idea, I didn't have the slightest idea what does it mean to go on my own path, to have no map, to have no guidance. So the day after I became very, very confused. But ever since the passion, the passion was always there. The passion was to literally die in order for the truth to replace me. Mm. You see? This was my passion, this was my constant prayer towards the mystery. Mm. Please, if it means dying, even physically, just for the truth to take over, to replace my place, because I realized my entire universe was a false creation. You see? Mm. But my entire perception was false. So it had to die.
So sometimes in life we are inspired, we are moved along, in this case from communication with the CM teacher. The impact of that, it touches a strong faith inside. It takes us to different parts of the world, yet nevertheless we are still carrying views, still carrying a wish, still looking for something, and the old inner life is still operating in wishing to become.
Mm-hmm.
Wishing to become enlightened, wishing to become one with the oneness of things, or whatever,
mm-hmm,
whatever it might be.
It gets mixed, you know, the wishing to become, yeah, and wishing to be united.
Yes.
Because this wishing to become is a very personal, is again part of suffering.
Yes.
So,
and of course, there can be, as you pointed out, times in our experience where we touch on something. There is some feeling and some quality of experience, we may call it oneness or being with God, but as you say, can be very, very short-lived.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we can go from lovely oneness to less than lovely confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
back and forwards between the two. Was there a time or a moment when there was a radical shift for you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. But it all began at the age of 23.
23?
Quite young. And so it meant old enough. Thank you. So yes, it began at the age of 23 when a really radical shift began to take place. It took place in many dimensions, in many levels of my being, from the energetic to psychological and also physical. It was quite a certain transmutation which I simply couldn't comprehend at that time. But The main thing was a radical shift in my personal, in my identity. Because my personal identity began to vanish. Then it was as if I became nothing. Nobody. There was nothing there.
So, sometimes, as you point out, a radical shift is not only in the perceptions, it's not only in the mental life, it's not only in the emotional feeling life, but also in the personality.
In the very identity, yes. Yes.
There, and affecting cellular life, affecting energy, and one knows that something quite radical has taken place in the being.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see any relationship of that to the here and now?
To the here and now?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Hour of now.
What do you mean?
Meaning, in this exploration and in communication with others, others could listen and some may say, God, I've never, nothing like that ever happened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What's going to help trigger that? Is it possible for me to have such an experience? Is this experience absolutely critically vital to show there is a real change in me, a night and day change from identity to being nobody to being everything, or whatever? So some will say, an important vehicle for this change to take place is, some will say, the power of now.
Mm-hmm.
By being really present. The present moment offers the best opportunity for a real fundamental change. What's your view, Shai?
Well, first of all, it was never my experience, or it was never my understanding that if you're in your full presence, then you're in your full presence, that can be a link, because my own understanding was that if you're in your full absence, you see, then that can be a link, you see, in your full, in your complete dissolution. So it means that whatever I did, if we're talking about the power of now, was questioning or inquiring right now, okay, who is the observer, who is the seer, who is the experiencer of all things.
Yeah.
You see? Who's the speaker, for example?
So, if I get it clear for the moment in the listening, it's not so much the now, which is the important thing, or the power of now, as some people will say, but it is the nature of the experiencer, of the watcher, or the seer of the event.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me more direct, you see, because it comes through negation.
Mm. Yes. So, but what is the negation of?
It's the negation of basically memory.
Memory?
Yes. That can link us to the here and now, to the power of now, yes, because you get to see through inquiry that there is a certain self-image. You see, it's like mirroring oneself, and we have this self-image in the mind, you see? And this self-image is created by memory.
Mm-hmm.
It's created by certain projections, by certain ideas about oneself. Mm-hmm? And if we don't have this self-image, if we negate that self-image, then we get nothing.
Mm. So we see in different ways there is the influence of the past upon us. And sometimes it gives great importance to the present moment. Through memory, we want something, we have a memory, we like it, we're pushed towards things. There's the influence of the past of memory through reactivity. Coming positively and negatively, coming into the moment. Yet, obviously memory has a function. So as a small example, I was saying, I just walked from here with Danny, and beloved Iran sitting there, he's here to ring Danny up. Hey, Christopher, 5 o'clock, it's 5 to 5. So, memory has a clear use. How are we to distinguish useful memory from useless influence?
Well, there is psychological memory. You see, psychology, the memory of oneself as a psychological entity. You see? And this is false for me.
Right. False in which way?
False.
If you're asking all the questions, we can, you know, give me a half time in a minute. But just, false in which way?
False in which way? Well, it's false because self-image is, if we are completely in the present moment, then we are the present moment. You see, because this is the problem of duality, you know, regarding the here and now. I want to be in the here and now. You see, I want to be completely in the present. I see it as a problem, because who exactly is trying to be in the present moment? Yes. Yes.
Especially for meditators.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. I want to be in meditation.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
So, lovely to hear you. Because I'm a meditation teacher. So, the I arises, and the I says, I want to be in the present moment. So, the I, the image.
Yes, yes.
I.
Yes.
I
yes.
Want to be here and now.
Yes, yes.
I want to be clear. I want to be in the present moment. So in that, there is a duality, and there is a gap. And then we're forever trying to bridge the gap. And then you have a little taste of bridging the gap, so it's like, oh, I'm getting closer.
Yes, and
I experience the
cessation of the gap, yes, the dissolution of the gap, yes.
So then, we can go backwards and forwards between bridging the gap and being pushed back from the gap. Have you been to London before?
Yes, many times. Yes.
When you get off the underground, there's one of the greatest teachings on this
Yes, I know. I know this from land ago. Yes. Yes. I also noticed that.
They're very nice in the British area.
Land ago. Yes.
So a duality arises, and the duality is going backwards and forwards. And the self, the I, the watcher, the seeker, the trier, the meditator, the yogi, is constantly trying to bridge the gap. Yeah. In that, we may see that, we may say, my God, my life is backwards and forwards in this duality. Some will say, therefore, all our effort is pointless. Because it's a sustaining of the gap. I get connected, I get disconnected. I get the taste of oneness, I get the taste of fragmentation. And then I go backwards and forwards. And so some will say, well, if it's going to happen, there is nothing we can do about it. It will either happen to you or it won't. There will either be a radical shift for you or there won't. Because all the efforts, it is in some way preserving the seeker, the experiencer, the image, and the gap.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that one can do. What is it?
Well, I think it's a disaster.
A disaster?
Yes. because you see, first of all, this is exactly a basic part of my teaching, the teaching of the middle point, which is real wisdom. It's of course not my invention. Yes, you know. So the teaching of the middle point means that we have to find the very delicate point, the very perfect tension between complete effort and complete effortlessness, which comes about only after we experience completely the two poles. You see? Mm-hmm. You see, we're trying this complete effort, mm-hmm. and then there is complete tension, really? And then we try complete effortlessness, mm-hmm. and then there is, you know, a decay. Apathy. Yes. And we tend to become completely depend on grace. Yes. But what? So. Only in the Galilee, near my community. I can show you. Yes. So I think we have to experience the experiencer to the peak. You see, otherwise we can never see it in totality. We have to understand the process of the movement of the experiencer.
All right. Which is say though, how would we know to say okay, I'm committed to this. I really want to deeply explore this. I am committed to find out what this total effort is, to really know what this is. In order for that, my mind has to come in as the observer and say, this is the total effort. Or the mind might come in and say, well, actually, I could put a bit more in. When is the mind going to know it's as far as I can go with the effort? Because the mind, the judge, will come in and make some judgment about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then, half an hour later, we might have a change of view and say, well, it was 80% effort.
Well, you give everything you have.
Pardon?
You give everything you have.
At a
certain moment, because you can at this moment think that you'll have a certain amount of energy, a certain amount of passion, and this is all you can have,
yes.
This is all you can give. Mm-hmm. But if the attitude in meditation is that you're meditating in order to give yourself entirely to the mystery.
Yes.
And not to take something from the mystery, then it's unconditional meditation.
Right. And in that willingness to give ourselves, surrender ourselves, let go into the mystery, is it that simultaneously actually we're letting go of the effort that goes with it?
Again, please.
Letting go into the mystery.
Yes.
Letting to go into that which is beyond words,
mm-hmm.
is also simultaneously a letting go of the effort that goes with it.
Drop further?
Yeah. I'm asking.
Yes. You mean that if we give ourselves completely to the mystery,
yes.
do we let go of any kind of effort forever? Is this your question?
Or?
Well, I don't think so. We are humans.
What would be there's letting go into the mystery, there's realizations and insights that emerge from it. What kind of direction then might our effort then go? Where would you take the effort?
Afterwards.
Afterwards.
To to realize in full consciousness the meaning and implication of whatever we have realized, you see, to actually manifest it.
Yes.
And this is a very hard work.
Yes.
It's not an act of grace.
No.
You have to become what you've realized in meditation.
So, would you say? Mm-hmm. I've done enough questions last time, I promise. would you say that the only indication of a authentic and true loss of identity, I, self-image, the self-story, and all that goes with it,
mm-hmm.
the only indication of this is a dramatic and sudden, radical, fundamental shift, as if one is going suddenly from night to day.
Well, no, for most people it's not that radical.
Right.
It's much more gradual. I don't know how come for some people it's that radical,
mm-hmm.
but it's not as if, again, it's not as if it happened to me at the age of 23,
yeah.
and then it was completely finished.
Mm-hmm.
There was that fundamental collapse,
yeah.
you see, of self-identity, but then there was much work for the mystery
yeah.
to do.
Uh-huh.
And there still is.
Still
yes,
there.
Yes. Thank God. Yes.
Well, I've used up all my privileges.
Sorry?
I've used all my privileges. But I asked you all the questions. So,
yes.
It looks like in just listening that as we explore, in a way, the here and now, which often gets used in teaching, has been very much in the background, appropriately. And what's appropriately been in the foreground for us is the exploration of looking at the eye, the image,
mm-hmm.
the identity, and that constructed world that we...
Yes, through negation.
Mm-hmm.
Through negation, the here and now comes about or is revealed. Yes, 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 yes.
So anything you'd like to ask?
Yes, first of all, perhaps, can I hear your attitude towards everything I just said? Yes, yes, because you kept asking, yes, yes, yes. Because I'm really curious. I don't know the way of your teaching, your views, and I'm really curious.
Firstly, being a very lazy Englishman who is hopeless at learning any foreign language, I'm always completely impressed that people can talk about deep things of life and deep experiences and deep truths of life in a second language.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
Just for that.
Yeah.
But most importantly, listening, those who communicate is very, very well. Very, very clear and unambiguously, very beautifully, I would
mm-hmm.
say. And also, there is an accord in much of the language. So, both from the standpoint of experience and language that we use, we share a lot together there. If there's the little bit at the beginning there, and this was, in fact, not your words, but the words of the TM guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That the language of, if I remember right, oneness, what was the other words?
Mm-hmm. Oneness with the cosmos,
oneness
with the universe, and God.
And
yes,
God.
Yes.
This would not be my language.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think it also easily can carry with it duality. And the duality for ones who explore realization, it sets up for the self a goal already. Making the goal oneness will bring to the mind again and again and again separateness. In place of oneness. Making the mind towards God will give the feeling of separateness from God. Putting the word universe or cosmos or whatever does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
My concern from the standpoint of skillful means gives some sense of apart from, separate from, just by the mode of the language, and implies, oh, this is how things are there. So, apart from that little
I see. Is this in your opinion the reason why the Buddha is spoke only about the no self? Because you know it's really interesting.
Yeah.
This tension between the popular teachings of the East, of especially India, about the higher self, you see Atman, Brahman, and so on, that you give yourself to the self. And in the Buddhist tradition, that you lose the self, and that this is the highest reality, you see? That there's no self, that there's no center.
But your language, was more orientated towards the loss of identity, rather than this problematic thing of higher self and lower self. Who on earth is going to be so bold as to say which is which?
What do you mean?
Meaning, if one says, well, I've realized my higher self. Who is the I that's claiming this? So, it's important, I feel, to tread rather carefully in this area. And I think possibly the exploration of mystery is a little better. I think it keeps it free from the religious language. But to answer your point and question,
yes.
Actually, there is nowhere in the Buddhist text where the Buddha taught no self. The word is not in the text.
Okay.
The word is anatta. And it literally means not self. So, having a group there is no self doesn't fit in with everyday life experience. Just conventional life experience is particularly useful. And just to acknowledge the normality there. What's it's a tool, so it's not a claim of absoluteness in any way, it's a resource. And the resource in the teaching is to indicate and point out that the body is not me, not myself, not who I am. Precise translation from the Buddha's teachings and the best tradition. And therefore, living a life in which there is respect for the physical life, there is care and attention to it, but there is a knowing, there's a very profound knowing for us, that the body is not me, not myself, not who I am. And in the same way, with regard to the feeling life, and the emotional life, it arises, we experience it, we care to it, etc. The thought life, the perceptional life. So to understand, this is an event or a process which is going on. In order to realize something, not of this condition, right. Otherwise, the poor self is in this horrendous plight and problem of trying to nuke itself, blow itself up, to have a no self, And then the eye says, oh, I just had a note on. So it's a not self understanding without any trace of rejection, very respectful to organic life, to perceptual life, but to be clear, this is not me, not myself, not who I am. And I think that has the capacity for us as men and women of the earth to open up to a sense of hardcore teaching.
Thank you. So then does it lead to a realization of a real self, of a true self?
It doesn't. And the reason that it doesn't, because if as a person I say, here is this process unfolding, to claim there is a true self outside of this, as it were, would have to be just a claim. Because there'd be nothing to confirm. Myself, in smaller quotation mark, is known through this. And to say, oh, there is some another ultimate self outside of this, is a point of view. It's a way of interpreting. So the exploration is to see what is the true nature. So, in the language, so there's this world of self and other, self and separation, self of me and you. That is all held rather lightly. So that, like a wave, we are just small waves in the great ocean of things. And it's the realization of the ocean that matters. Not being concerned with a higher self, or a lower self, or a known self. I mean, it's confusing.
Yes. But it's very beautiful, I think, what we're pointing out through this discussion, that through negation, there comes the positive realization. And if we trying to reach the positive realization in positive means, then it can lead to the danger of becoming.
Yes.
It's exactly that temptation.
Say that again. Make it quite clear.
Yes. It was pretty sophisticated. Sorry. So if we say, for example, I want to be in the present moment, then this is positive. These are positive means, you see, because I want to have a positive experience.
Yes.
You see, a specific experience that I may project in my mind, for example, and then trying to reach it, trying to have it. But if we go the other way around, through negation, you see, we are inquiring into that very ambition, into that very self-image. And that duality, then slowly, if we bring it very passionately and very seriously and very consciously, then slowly the very revelation of the power of now is here.
Look at it in this way,
and one or two other
ways. As one says to oneself, I wish to live a truly realized life.
Yes.
To know how things really are. For some people, the vehicle will not be through negation in this way, but will be through a certain amount of effort and exploration to, as it were, enter more into the field of the now. And through that more positive approach there is the potential for all this I, me and my, to be losing its significance, losing its substance, losing its reality, because the human being is saying to herself or himself, I really want to experience fully what this moment is. And that very positive view to being rather immersed and absorbed into it has a negating influence upon I, me and mine.
Mm-hmm.
But other men and women, as you point out, where rather than going, as it were, to the here and now in the way I just described, actually see and look at this whole construction of the self, of the image, of the picture, the story, the identity, all those things. See through it, see the emptiness of it all. It's just a construction and it dissolves. However, both are a movement. There is a view.
Both are?
A movement.
A
movement in time. And the movement in time which is taking place is what is the positive, as I just described. The other is through negation, as you described. But the view and the belief behind it, supporting it, is that through the positive or through the negation, something has will happen, is happening. I just wonder whether our sweet, beloved little lion, with its great interest to explore things deeply through the positive or through the negative, actually makes any real difference to anything.
Sorry? Yes.
Well, I'm interested, I'm a woman of the earth, I'm a man of the earth.
Yes.
Living in my 20 different worlds.
If I'm lucky, yes.
Yes. Boring the
mutton.
So, let's connect. Let's experience the moment. And is no fun touch. So where is the world, who I am and my identity? Seems rather vacuous. And importance. A small change. Or I go in the way of negation. And as you described so beautifully.
Yes.
The point I was just making was, here's my little mind, through my perception, thinking and believing behind it, that if I do this, go the positive way, if I do this, go the way of negation, that somehow it's really going to make a difference to anything at all. This is a little...
You know, if you have any... If you develop any way to reach the goal, then your mind becomes stagnant, you see. Yeah. So first of all, we have to become to be tremendously creative, because you see, we have the intention, we have the passion. We cannot deny the passion. If you deny the passion, then it's terrible, because you are so lucky if you get that passion burning in your veins.
You see. Passion for the Dharma.
So there's no way to deny the passion. It would be really sad to do that.
Yes,
because you know teachers say, drop the passion, drop the will.
Yeah.
You see, yeah. But I find it extremely beautiful.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
yes, yes. So, but we cannot have a specific mindset about, you know, the how. We cannot have the how.
Yes.
You see, because if you say, if I pray enough, then I'll get that, and you have that, you know, the how, how to get it. You see? But I think that if you have that passion, it will just lead you in many, many directions, but it's out of falling in love. It's not that motivation, you know, that becomes very manipulative. That you're trying to trick God.
Yes.
To trick God.
Trick God.
Yes, yes.
Mm.
Yes, in many ways. I'll negate, then I'll get it.
Yes.
I'll try to be present, then I'll get it.
Well,
it's a matter of falling in love.
Yeah.
If you fall in love, then there's no question of effort or no effort, of technique or anything.
You're right there. It's true.
Did you not fall in love and that's it?
I know it's falling in love.
Yes, yes.
I hope to until I die.
Yes, yes. Meditation is simply the act of falling in love.
I'll coach you at my next retreat.
Yes. Yes.
To the mistress, that we usually can bring in the kind of consumer life, as you point out.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to do this, I'm going to get this in return.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to put out all this effort and all this trying, unless I'm going to get something back.
Yes, yes.
The secular culture lives on this ideology.
A materialistic one, yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, and ideological. And we're in a revolution against this. And yet, we generate passion. We bring our life, our consciousness to situations. We engage in that. Beautiful thing to do. And key feature of the beauty, and especially of mystery, is it is so utterly unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Life is an utterly unpredictable event. And so sometimes the mystery is closer to us than we think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Closer to us than all our practices. Closer to us than being positive or the way of negation. Even that activity is bloody mysterious. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. It may be even what you're pointing out, that it may be even some kind of a pride.
Yeah.
To think that we can technique our way to enlightenment.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because it's denying the action of the mystery.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So sometimes we get a kind of Newtonian view. English one a couple of centuries ago.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Had this very bizarre idea, which the West believed for a while, that life was mechanistic. You did this course, and you got to this. And then quantum physics came along, and blew the myth away. So, from a scientific standpoint and a life experience standpoint, we live in something which we can't quite get our hands around. And yet, I, and others, do experience some benefit through method and technique. Do experience some benefit to form. But we can easily identify with it, grab hold of it, and think, if I keep doing this again and again and again and again and again and again and again, then I will get to this.
It becomes a habit in the mind. Yes.
Memory.
Yes. Yes. So which brings about more accumulation of self.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes.
But then, as the other brothers, could rather forget them, then say, oh yes, yes, the method and technique is all.
Nice.
This has been the top of the hit rate for 1,000 years, and we're privileged to be in Japan. I like to listen. My favorite song. A few days ago, last Monday and Tuesday. I hope one day we can all go through Strand. Nazareth. And spend some time with our brothers and sisters, because at the moment the very government doesn't trust the very citizens to go and see for yourself what's happening. It's a great
thing.
They cannot.
They could
in the same time. They could in the
same
time, yes. All right, yes. Yeah. So. It's a whole bit of a stuff. So we're touching upon unpredictability, and this is closer. So it communicates something of a mystery. The unpredictability of the pillar at the top of the minaret, just coming, entering into our consciousness.
Which means that we have to make a lot of space in our meditation for no direction whatsoever.
Yeah.
It means that we have to have that kind of choiceless listening. Because our brain is much too linear.
Too linear.
Yes, yes. So it, again, we we may project a certain image of what enlightenment is. And then, if we get that, it becomes quite boring. You see? You see, because we got exactly our own image. Yes.
So
enlightenment must be a shock.
A shock?
Yes. It must be something really new, tremendously new. Something that even if you, for example, if you experience it for 20 years, it must be new. That, do you want to say that enlightenment may be
completely old and beautiful, timeless, not having any characteristic of newness or oldness to it? Could it be that a person just listening this evening, in a very privileged position of being small servants of the Dharma, could just listen? And in the very process of a choiceless interest, this room, which was in described, the quiet meditation, just listening to two people talking about life together, and without any major event, without any shock, without any sense of something dramatically new for her or for him, there's a quiet, almost unnoticeable realization that takes place, in which the human being can't sense, feel any difference in the sensation, in the cellular life, in the emotion, in the thought, yet there's been a quiet shift. And in this quiet, almost unnoticeable shift that's taken place, there is a taste of mystery which never loses its taste. Possible?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
And I see in that, you see, it's isn't it very new to realize? Very fresh.
It could be looked in that way, but from a non-dual view, it's neither new nor old.
I see. It's the emphasis on the new is because of
the
yes, it's important. I see. Yes.
Exploring
news
which invites other views.
Mm-hmm.
Neither
you nor me nor us.
It's
much more accurate. Yes. Yes.
So we've used a good hour here. Is there anything else that you'd like to say to us, Shara? Or is there any questions?
Yes.
Anything you would like to ask along the team?
Lily?
Lily? Christopher said in a round way, shut your mouth.
No, of course, absolutely. We need to run this, so you're
introduced. But tomorrow night I won't shut it.
I know. I remember a year ago. So, anyone, please, sorry, yes. You can stand up. You can carry your voice to the good being that it has.
Shai, in your teaching, you're speaking about the soul, and in the Buddhist tradition, it's not so much.
Mm-hmm. So,
not so much. So, can you please explain what
awakening
the soul is for you, or what is the soul?
Well, I got into trouble now. To speak in a Buddhist audience about the soul is really getting into trouble. What is your name, please? Hey?
Sean.
Well, the soul. The soul in my teaching refers to the part in ourselves which is our own a specific dharma. You see, in my teaching, soul means that each one of us is going, if you're fulfilling your full potential in body and mind, then you'll manifest a specific divine aspect. You see? One of the numerous faces of God will be manifested through you. So it means that there is a part in you that is in a way personal. You see? That is in a way meant to manifest as a specific divine aspect, and there is a certain dharma. But dharma means here your full potential, your own unique full potential. So it's like, sorry? No. Buddha nature is completely impersonal in a way. You see, the way you're going to fulfill or to manifest Buddha nature is your soul print. That's the teaching. And you have to, in your own teaching, you have to awaken to this specific soul print. You see, it's a different dimension in of awakening. It's the part in you that knows what you have to do, what you have to become in this life. So that's the teaching. It's a very complex teaching because it combines Indian tradition, yogi tradition, and Buddhist tradition, and Judaism. So, you're lucky. You're lucky.
I just use it freestyle. I have some nice friends here.
Oh. Yes. But you see, in my own experience, I realize that I cannot exclude any specific realization of any religion. You see, so slowly I began to realize through my own experience that there is Judaism that speaks about something, for example, and Buddhism that speaks of not self, you see, and the Hindu tradition that speaks about Brahman and Atman, but it's all true, and so I got this strange urge to create a certain synthesis, which I call everything at once.
Everything at once.
That we have to become, at least according to this to this teaching, everything at once, to manifest our impersonal dharma, personal dharma, and so on. It's very complex. Sometimes I get crazy because of the complexity. You know, trying to squeeze it all into one teaching. Also, my students they become crazy, slowly but surely. I'm just joking. They seem quite okay.
But it is important, the exploration. It's vital. We have the freedom of language, the freedom to explore the different meanings, as you say, in this world. And if it inspires and gives some insight and opens up the consciousness more, and certainly we've got to dig deep into our resources, east and west and middle and east, to touch a deeper place.
Yes.
Because it's appalling, this degree of fragmentation and self-righteousness which permeates religions everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And more that we can get under all that superfluous stuff of comparing, judging, approving, and disapproving, you might find something else which is profound.
Yes, that is totally vibrant.
Absolutely. And it's worth going through the struggle with the complexity as you
see. Exactly. 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 Yes.
Should we have a couple of minutes? Is there anything else on the stage?
Nothing.
Should we have a few minutes?
There is one more question? But, or,
yes,
or
we do.
How do you meditate without meditate? Like you mean not going or identify with the one who meditates and I'm going to accomplish something. But to be in this kind of a state of being without falling into the path of or to this dogma of like a meditation as in a separate way, mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This one is for you. Yes. it's a very hard question, so I pass it to you.
I'll quote Guruji. He reminded us earlier on of the importance of falling in love. And when we fall in love, the preciousness of it and the loveliness of it itself is nourishing and fulfilling. And in that respect, with meditation, it's falling in love with life. And there's a quiet joy to it. There's a love of silence there. There's a love of connection, which is there. And one just can't ask nor want for anything else. Because it is just fulfilling unto itself. And one knows that very, very well. Life is already fulfilled. It is already complete. And that's what we need to know. Let's have a couple of...
Now I'm going up. Right.
It's endless.
The other gender at this time. Two women. Yes, please,
hello.
I noticed both of you were using the term mystery. And I wonder where does this come from? Is it another name, the Atman, God, Self, the Truth, or since when is this channel?
It's a mystery.
Well, in my experience, if we meditate deeply, then we'll experience ourselves as the tip of the iceberg. Am I saying it correctly? Yes, yes. So that. There's some kind of an immensity behind us that we just the manifest expression of it. So this is my experience of a profound mystery, and I keep telling my students that the mystery is 99.99999% of our existence, and we're only that much, yes, which is the known. So I'm not calling it Brahman or God or higher self or anything, but just a profound, profound mystery. That's it. Is how I see it.
The word which we use and agree to is a small effort as a human being in a way to communicate something which is unspeakable and unutterable and utterly inexpressible. And what our mind knows is what we can see. And we live so much, as Shari was saying, in conceiving and conceiving and conceiving. And sometimes we realize that kind of the limitations, all this conceiving about, and the dropping, the negation of all of this conceiving leaves us that which is inexpressible. And for convenience, there's a fluid word between the word of perceiving, we've used the word mystery.
It's not a new age
word. So,
everything is a new age word. They use the term, so.
We've just easily used events. Limitless, infinite, immeasurable, true, the nature of things, reality, God, inexpressible. All saying something which is not limited and constructive.
Yes, exactly. Everything that is beyond the limits of our brain.
Yes.
That our brain can get in touch with, that it's not, it cannot contain it.
Yes.
This is the mystery.
Let's have a couple of quiet minutes. So we'll have just 2 minutes, 2 minutes of shared silence together.
I really appreciate what you're doing here, and I wish you all good luck in this in these following days.
Anything you want to say?